Ready, Greg?
You are on the record.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to our Wednesday, May 22nd, 2019 ADA board meeting. Welcome everybody in the conference room and online. The meeting is called to order. I'll ask Corinne to do a roll call vote for the board members.
Ms. Sandy.
Here.
Deputy Commissioner Samarowski.
Here.
Mr. Ketty.
Here.
Mr. Vogel. Commissioner Anderson.
Here.
Mr. Carl.
Here.
Mr. Pruse.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. Would you continue with staff and public, please, Chris?
Okay. As I point to you, please state your name and organization. I'll start here at the table.
Tom Boutin, ADA.
Karsten Rodvik, ADA.
Jeff Benoit, ADA.
Elizabeth Greer, ADA.
Rich Boutin, ADA.
Jonathan Blomquist, ADA.
LaDonna Lindley, Architect.
Andrew Ingram, Sun Mountain Development Group.
Sue Wolf, Northrend Bank Lender for Sun Mountain Development Group.
Joe Moran, Northrend Bank. John Lucy, Manuscus, Assistant Borough.
Beck Row.
Andy Sedgwick, ADA.
John Florio, HDR.
Ashley Compton, ADA. Juve Ellsworth, ADA.
Alan Weissner, ADA.
Benison, ADA. Michelle Pope, ADA.
Russell Dick, Minnesota.
Lori Scarano, Minnesota.
Sherry Peterson, ADA.
Mark Davis, ADA. Jerry Jude, Department of Law.
Bill Phelan, ADA.
Brandon Applegate, ADA.
Chris Anderson, ADA.
Sam Tappan, ADA.
Ben Kempinen, ADA. Do we have any public on the phone?
Yes, Robin Brenner, Goddess of the Process.
Okay, I got Robin. Who's the next one?
Cameron Johnson, Sun Mountain Development Group.
This is Bernie Smith, member of the public.
Any other public?
Who's the first person to repeat their affiliation?
Robin, can you repeat your affiliation for the board members, please?
RSV Properties.
Okay, thank you. Any other public? Thank you.
Thanks, Corinne. Under agenda is item number 4, agenda approval. Board members had a chance to take a look at it. Julie, have you had do you have everything in front of you? And Bernie,
we have everything. Yes,
I do.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Do you need a motion?
I need a motion for approval.
To approve the agenda.
I make a motion that we approve the agenda as presented.
Second.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Julie. Next up is public comments. I'll remind everybody, please limit your time to 3 minutes per person. For our recorder, please state your name and affiliation if you do have a comment. And I will start online. Is anybody online wishing to make a public comment? Anybody online? All right. Hearing nobody online. Anybody in the boardroom wishing to make a public comment? Seeing nobody, I will close the public comment section. That brings us up to prior minutes for April 17th and April 22nd. I'll entertain a motion to put it on the floor for discussion.
I make a motion we approve the prior minutes, April 17th and April 22nd.
Thank you, Bill. Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion? Has everybody had a chance to look at the minutes? Any corrections, clarifications? Any objections to approving the minutes? If no objections, we'll the minutes are approved. That brings us to item number 7, new business. The order in your packet is a little bit different than the order on the agenda, so item 7J will be up first. A2A project presentation. Tom?
Yep. Thank you. This rail linkage and extension has been in the news just about every day, and board member Bill Kendig was kind enough to arrange for Matsu Borough Manager John Moosey to come and make a presentation on this so-called A2A project.
Thank you, Tom. Before we get started, does Bernie and Julie have this in front of them?
Yes.
Julie?
I'm sorry, I don't know if I have this one. Is this one in our packet?
No, it wasn't in the packet. Sherry emailed it.
Sherry emailed it, Julie. It's Alberta Alaska Railroad presentation.
Okay, perfect. I've got it now. Thank you.
All right. Good morning, John, and welcome to the ADA board meeting.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me. I know you have a full agenda, so I'll be concise.
If you would indulge us when you go before our board members that are online, when you go from slide to slide, there's a number on the slide so that they can follow online which slide you're referring to. I appreciate that.
Okay. Which one do I click to move to the next one?
I think on the right.
Right click?
Yeah.
Okay. We haven't done the right click yet, so
okay.
We're slide number one.
We'll try that.
Okay. So this is an Alberta to Alaska Railway project. The Mass Borough is involved in this at Fort McKenzie. The A to A group, which is Alberta to Alaska, a private group, is going to be doing this. Also, too, the Alaska Railroad Corporation has a part of this in the state of Alaska. And the purpose of this is to connect the Canadian rail line to the Alaska rail line with a terminus in Alaska being at Fort McKenzie. Does that work?
No. Try left side. Scroll. There you are.
Okay. So we are on page number two on the challenge. And first off, I'd like to say that we are just across from the Port of Alaska. But our purpose is different than theirs. They do a very good job at what they're doing. But we develop Port McKenzie as a resource development port. We want to bring in cargo and really unlock the value of our resources along the rail line. And that is the purpose of this project. The state of Alaska, through the state of Alaska, has already invested $184 million into Fort McKenzie rail extension. We need $125 million to complete this project. I have searched when the economy changed for the state of Alaska. I've been searching for the past 3 years trying to find some partners. And primarily in the state of Alaska, there is not enough resource development at this point in time to have a private investor monetize just for resources right now available in the state of Alaska. So this is very important for us, this project, because it is large enough. The A-to-A project is between $13 and $14 billion project to do this.
John, when you refer to not enough to monetize the project, are you referring to monetize the finishing of the rail, the $120 million for the rail, or is there some other infrastructure at the port besides the?
Yes, it is to finish the $125 million. So
for the rail
extension of Fort McKenzie.
Okay, and that's and that is. So there's two ways to the port, eventually by rail or by truck. Is that
also by truck. But as everybody knows, the way you get these commodities to the market is really trying to drive down the transportation cost. The rail will do that for us. It's iffy at best for highway transportation of the resources. So I'm going to the next slide. Which is the project. So this is a general freight rail line with cargo going in and out. And that's part of the challenge that we have with resources going out. The ships come back in empty. And so if we can monetize both traffic going in and out, that's where the value is. And by connecting the rail line, shipments can be brought in through Alaska and get down to the lower, into Canada, into the lower 48. The original reason this project came forth is the bitumen, which is a high viscosity, thick oil, is kind of stranded in Alberta. And so they have been looking at ways to get that out to market because of some blockage with environmental reasons with the pipeline. So flipping to the next.
Is that the sands, oil sands? Is that
oil sands?
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So next page, we are diversity of Alaskan economy. This is what's really kind of unique about this time right now. It's traffic coming in from the far east is pretty much locked up on the west coast. The ports are over capacity. It's my understanding that ships can get there and have to sit out in the ocean for a week to 10 days, just cooling their heels till they can get into a port to deliver the goods. We've been told if it comes to Alaska with a rail connection, we could get to product to Chicago about 4 days sooner than they can right now. There's also on the West Coast, there is a lot of pressure on the ports because that's where the valuable property is, and as the economy grows, as people need condos out on the waterfront, and it has to be all beautiful, these ports have more and more pressure to relocate or to shrink their footprint. So we think this is the right time. It's estimated $750 billion worth of minerals are within 100 miles of the Alaska Rail Corridor. The challenge for us is that it takes a while for mines to open. We have a couple that are going online, but with the environmental concerns, the state requirements, the investment has to be able to be monetized for people to start going down this process. And we think once Fort McKenzie Rail is complete, it will open up some markets and make it financially viable to move this product out of the state. So next,
yeah, just understanding the route, or maybe you can bring that up. So it would come from Fort Nelson roughly to Eielson. That's where it would connect into the Alaska rail system.
That is correct. Okay. Yeah. So next slide is Fort McKenzie. I want to talk about Fort McKenzie. As you can see on the slide, the port dock space that is 15 acres at that point in time. The trestle is 60 low mean feet. At low tide, at 60 feet. At the base of the dock, that's 20 feet at low tide. In addition, we have 14 square miles of industrial space. So it's not competing with homes. It's not competing a little bit of recreation for people to decide they can hunt and an ATV anywhere they want, which they pretty much can in the majority of Mat-Su. But this is ideal for future industrial development, that sort of thing, because there's really no conflict. And as you can see, there is our port is available right now for our large type and small business opportunities. Heading to the next page called the Port District.
Chad, did you say 14 square miles?
14 square miles of industrial space. So, which equates to about 9,000 acres at the Fort McKenzie District. That is all dedicated to industrial work.
Not opportunity zone by any chance.
Pardon me?
It's not opportunity zone by any chance, I don't assume. Right?
No, because we did not qualify. We did not have, of course, nobody living down there, but we did not have the low-income folks that we know of living there to be able to qualify for the opportunity zone.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Thanks.
So we are less than a mile away from Anchorage, and you can see how close we are to the port of Anchorage. One thing I'd like to point out, Fort McKenzie, it's a self-scouring. So as Anchorage has to do annually some dredging in our areas, we do not at Fort McKenzie.
Go ahead, Julie.
Question regarding, I've attended a couple of these presentations, and one of the issues that keeps coming up is the current that's there at Fort McKenzie. Mm-hmm. Have you found a way to work around that strong current?
We have not seen, the folks we have brought in actually use it have not had an issue.
Oh, but that means so.
Yes. Now, I'll show you in a little bit of expansion and what for that current what they do is for the trestle they'll realign future trestles in a different angle for future.
So John, you mentioned that you don't have to do any dredging at the port. Is there a restriction between the port and I will call the channel all the way out to, I guess, the Kiski? Is there any issues with size of ships or draft or tides, yep, coming in on tides or high tides.
So there is a tide issue, but it's no different than the Port of Alaska with the cargo ships coming in. I mean, we're just right across there. The difference is it's self-scouring, so Port McKenzie would not have that annual investment on the dredging.
So could a container ship come to this port?
Yes, absolutely.
A tote or
They could. Our intention has not been to compete with the Port of Alaska. It has been for resource development. We've been really clear on that. We don't.
Well, I'm just thinking in size.
Size-wise, yes.
Size, you know, we're all used to seeing those ships come up Kinlet and see the size of that. So a ship of that size would have no problem going to your port.
Correct.
Okay.
Do you feel an ocean-going vessel could access Port McKenzie?
Yes.
Like one large enough to do thousands of containers? I mean, I'm thinking if we do the bitumen, which they said would be about 300 cars a day, that's a heck of a lot of...
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
So, John, what year was it? Did Ron Harmon bring a super cold ship up there one year, just to top it off, just to prove the point?
This is more to prove the point, but yes, two slides away. Okay. I got a picture.
Okay.
We're now moving to the Port McKenzie specs. So essentially, I kind of spoke with this. It is available for cargo and staging. And talk a little bit, but that is a 220-ton spool. We brought two of those into Port McKenzie, and this is the electric line that laid on the ocean floor for Fire Island. So that was staged at Port McKenzie.
So, John, is there a right of way from the port for a road system, the road to essentially parallel the railroad to get to the Parks Island, or do you have to go back through Wasilla?
So yes. There is plenty of room. The corridor, at a minimum, is 200 feet in width. Many times it's 600 to 800 feet. The issue with putting a road right next to the rail line is the STB project process. So we went through and did it for rail only. We would have to go back through the same process to add the road at this point.
Okay.
So we are now on the ships. No, we're not. Okay. Sorry about that. And we are now at ships at Port McKenzie. This is a JP Azure.
It's a real ship.
Okay. It's a real ship, yeah. Not a model. Those are not model tugboats next to that. See, what this is wood chip and coal. So it was a combination that we did. And this was done probably about 8 years ago. It was brought in. So... It has been done. It can be done, and I don't think I think this size of ship, which the company brought in, it's a Japanese company. This is one of the largest ships, and they do a lot of ocean voyages. The next is slide we're going to is called the Project Cargo. This is where the two spools, 220-ton spools for Fire Island, was done. It was staged there and brought in. We've had, recently, 16 lineal miles of concrete-coated pipe brought in for Fury, a Fury project. We've had cargo going in and out of there. We grow scrap metal out in the valley. We've had a couple scrap metal shipments go out. Unfortunately, China's not buying our waste anymore. So we have done smaller one-off, two-off projects. We've had, at one time, the construction buildings were built out of Port McKenzie and sent up north to villages, and then also, too, for... The oil companies, but that issue kind of dried up and that business went away. So the port's available. We've demonstrated we can do practically anything at Port McKenzie.
Is there any fabrication facilities in the area out there, John?
At this point in time, there is not.
Okay. No IQ warehousing or.
We do have a couple warehouses there, but there is no operation facility. At one time, we were bringing in cement in super sacks. And when we did that, it really, from my understanding, it was before my time, we were driving down the cost of cement about 20% in the state of Alaska just by bringing Metroport McKenzie and getting to the market.
Is that still happening or no?
It is not happening at this point in time.
Okay.
Next slide is going to be Port McKenzie has room to grow. As you can see, we can do three more trestles to the south and two more to the north. One thing that is interesting about this is the Mat-Su Borough has control of the tide lands all up and down that area. So we have control of that, which means we have control of the water for any type of expansion. We have plans to do so, but the investment will not be made until we have a user, because we want to have it designed as the user wants, as opposed to us spending money and guessing what a future business may want.
So how do they load that bitumen onto the ships?
So the bitumen, let me see if we can go back. The bitumen on the ships, they can use our trestle to begin with, and that's the plan. They will build one or two of their trestles, and it will just, it's just heavy viscosity oil, so it'll be pipelines. It will not be as beefy as our current trestle system is right now.
Do they have to heat the oil to get the flow on the pipe?
Yes, they do.
Oh, actually, okay. If I can add to that, because this is the third A2A presentations I had this week.
Okay.
Get
over there with John.
Right. the way that the trains are designed is that coming down the slope from Denali to Tidewater, that heat that's generated from the braking system will actually be applied to that bitumen and make it liquidified enough to actually ship it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they don't have to add any kind of extra product.
Okay, next slide is 8A Master Agreement, Alaska Railroad. So essentially, I want to kind of repeat, we are in negotiations right now with the A2A group. Our project is $125 million. In addition, the Mat-Su Borough has applied for an infra grant. This was the FAST grant under Obama administration, and then we had a new president, so he renamed it, called the infra grant. And we've asked for $25 million of $125 total project. If we get that grant, it'll help drive down the costs for the developer. If it doesn't, they are prepared to move forward with the $125 million project. So their plan is for this project.
Go back to what you just said. Just repeat the last sentence.
Last sentence. So if we do not get the $25 million from the federal infra grant,
right,
the developer is prepared to monetize $125 million themselves.
Right. You mean the A2A group?
A2A group,
okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
So in addition to us, the A2A group envisions them operating the A2A rail line, which needs to get approval from the Alaska Railroad Corporation. Alaska Railroad Corporation is the only permitted user of the Alaska Railroad by state statute at this point in time. They are in discussions, and they are working through their MOU. In addition, for their expansion, which we'll show you, there has to be discussions and agreement from the University of Alaska Anchorage for some property for their expanded rail loop for this project.
So the rail coming out of Alberta would be a train operated by a third party, and it would come all the way into Anchorage or into the borough's port.
Correct, and that third party they envision to be A2A. Rail group or a subsidy.
There wouldn't be a transfer that at the border where the Alaska Railroad personnel would have to get on the train and run it from there.
Do we know if it's the same gauge, the Alaska Rail, and what would be built in Canada? I had heard there might be an issue with that.
There have been discussions with that. We believe there will be continued discussions because one of the things that the A2A group is trying to drive down the cost They have had a group come in and look at the different gauge, not size, but gauge, based upon speed. And I'm not a railroad guy, but they think they can save money if it's not required. They slow down the actual trains coming down our 32-mile stretch.
Okay.
So to and also in addition, if we're going to complete the okay, let's go ahead and jump past the Alaska Terminus and go to Vision. There we go, Vision for Development. So simple, what 8A is trying to do is create a rail corridor for bitumen, but also cargo traffic back out into the state of Alaska. Certainly any connection to the Alaska Railroad Corporation's rail will be able to use this and pretty much have the same opportunity. We at Wetsuboro are trying to expand our commercial industrial tax base. That's very important to us. Anchorage has a great commercial industrial tax base, and so when it comes to property tax, you have some of that picking up the burden for the residents. A vast majority of the taxes are being paid by the borough residents. So when we have to go up a couple percent, it's borne by all our residents, where Anchorage and Fairbanks and others have much diverse tax base, and the burden is not there. Also looking at creating jobs. Matsu Valley residents, I think, are really making Anchorage thrive because of all the talent coming in from the valley every day to support business and that sort of thing. We would like to retain and keep some of those folks at home. And in my pitch, economic development-wise, is it's about a two and a half hour trip every day, round trip, every day for everybody that comes to the valley and works in Anchorage. If we could cut that down to a 30-minute round trip, we're giving families an extra 10 hours a week for kids, better t-ball players. There'll be more little girls in tutus and that sort of thing because we have more people to kind of push through. So it's a social, it's an economic, and it's also, too, it gets traffic off of off the highway back and forth, especially when it snows and everybody's is really safe and drives 15 miles an hour. So economic can really drive a whole lot of social change in the valley, and that's why we're really kind of focusing on this, because we think jobs can be created that pay well, support families, and give people more time in their communities and home.
So, John, if I could ask you.
Go ahead, Greg.
When you talk about cutting time, are you talking about what the potential building of the bridge is added, or what are you referring
no.
to?
No. Oh, that's for another presentation.
Okay, so I mean, when you said cutting the travel time to
cutting travel valley, time, I'm trying to keep some of the talent in the Mad Valley working in the Mad Valley as opposed to the only option going to Anchorage to work.
Yeah.
That's my point.
Okay.
Although that is a good idea. Maybe somebody should work on that.
Well, okay, can I just ask the question at this point that I wanted to ask? So, building out Port McKenzie, okay, could have some advantages to other than the railroad, like manufacturers that may want to establish an anchorage who would need a good port facility.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is the train that you're envisioning with the extension the way for Anchorage businesses to access Port McKenzie? Or do you think the bridge would have to be built? What would be your view on that, if you have one?
I believe the bridge would have to be built, because still, for the rail to get to Anchorage, there's no plans on doing a rail line across Cook Inlet at this point in time. If it was, you could move it pretty easy. But the rail distance to get to Houston, I mean, for us, it's 32 miles. From Anchorage, it may be, 65, 70 miles.
To get to the port from Anchorage?
To get to the port from Anchorage, you're probably looking about a 100-mile round trip. I mean, one way, 100 miles one way. on rail.
If history repeats itself, it's always been rail first, followed by roads. You know, and that's why I asked the question about the right of way. The rail's actually completed, you know, the right of way for a road to soon follow, and then that brings, you know, that's the other reason why I asked if there's any industrial development there now. Once that happens, it kind of the next obvious step is a bridge.
Yeah. I mean, you might imagine we're getting bombarded with bridge people coming in. So.
Yes. Yes. Well, and since we're talking bridge, if I can jump off track, but imagine if you will buy a half acre residential lot 2 miles from downtown Anchorage. We have a spot laid out, a town spot laid out when that bridge is done, for outside the port area for that. I mean, the property can be very valuable and really kind of change and allow the continue of Anchorage to grow.
Okay.
So sorry for getting off track.
So basically, in summary, you're saying you would be able to railroad things from Anchorage to Port McKenzie, but it may be difficult given it's about 100 miles.
That is correct. But Anchorage to the connection at Houston makes a whole lot of sense. So the Port of Alaska also can be a part of, you know, of this process. If there's a lot of cargo coming in through Alaska, there is an opportunity for the Port of Alaska to participate, since they have the rail there right now.
Right, it's
a scale issue. The more traffic you get, cost goes down, the more opportunities for all of us.
And just in my own mind, I'm trying to think, I mean, don't tell anybody this outside the phones, whether we need both the Port of Anchorage and Port McKenzie built out to service what we all envision at some point. Yeah.
For this project, to ship that you've been out, I would think most definitely the Port of Alaska could handle that.
Right, no, that would have to be Port McKenzie. Right. I'm just thinking longer term how the region might look with ports.
Yeah, okay. I really...
Anchorage is landlocked. They can't really go anywhere other than out in the ocean, which is expensive.
Yeah. I think that is going to be decided at the political level, and only at the political level.
A couple of us are politicians here.
Great. Thank you very much.
Don't put me in.
Oh, you're one of them, Julie.
Here we go. We're in a conceptual look at Port McKenzie modifications. This is very preliminary, but this is how the rail loop conceptually is looked at. You can see to the right of the page, Port McKenzie, that in previous pictures looked pretty big. It was really kind of small compared to the multiple rail loops they would need for this, and it's multimodal or multi-use. It's just not bitumen. It's commodities. This is really built to be the resource development port for Alaska. And like I said, State of Alaska already has $184 million invested in what we've done so far. But without the conclusion of $125 million, it's just stranded. It's just a stranded investment. My fear is it goes much longer than these facilities that we've already built start to degrade. And it's going to be even a steeper climb to finish it. But at this point in time, I do not see the state of Alaska stepping up to this, at least not all. Maybe there's going to be a part in the future, but the ADA gives us the biggest, soonest opportunity to make this thing work without state dollars, all private. Priorities for the upland page.
Correct.
Hey, John.
Since you just made that comment now, how far is the borough willing to go in terms of allowing private investors to come in and do things with the port? For example, if someone wanted to buy the whole thing and develop it, I mean, at what point does the borough draw the line, or are you open to any proposals?
So we have, I'm going to tell you, we're open to any proposals. You know, bottom line is we need to create a tax base. We want to create jobs. And we want a vibrant economy. As borough manager, except for one time, the only job I had is working for government. I got to tell you, the private business with the incentives can do it a whole lot better than we can. You make no bones, you know, no bones about that. We don't have the resources. We'll never have the approval from the assembly to buy all the quality talent that we need. But there is a huge private sector investment opportunity that I think is ripe for them to take. So if this is based on lease, this is based on sale, this is based on a P3 partnership, we are very much open to any and all of that. Bottom line is, let's expand our tax base. Let's protect the borough from the downside, provide jobs. That's what we want to do.
Thank you.
And we want to be good for Alaska. We really do not want to compete with anyone else. We want to have the business grow as opposed to Port McKenzie taking somebody else's business away.
Thank you.
Priority for Uplands. I think Board Member Greg just handled that one for me. User identified for phase one, containers for general cargo in and out, mineral concentrates, bulk commodities, oil and gas, grains and food commodities, automotive and general cargo. We still had the Fairbanks issue with the heating costs being so high. They had the air quality issue. We were hoping a few years ago with the Westpac project and the REI project that one of those would have caught fire and we could have helped out our friends in Fairbanks, which would have led the impetus to actually finishing the rail line. Those did not move forward. But we see a lot of good things with Port McKenzie, the 8A project that will really benefit all of Alaska. And that is all I have for today, and I very much appreciate your time and interest.
John, I have some questions, but I want to see if Bernie or Julie have any questions for you online.
I think it's a very ambitious, long overdue project. The governor wants big projects, and the governor wants projects that are futuristic and help the economy in the future. I would say this project meets all that criteria. Thank you for the presentation.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, and we have shipped out of that port. We ship 50,000 tons of scrap out of there, so I can tell you that you guys can ship out of there just fine.
Julie, do you have any questions? Julie Sandy?
No, I don't, but I really appreciated the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
John, I have just a couple quick questions.
Okay.
One has to do with, when I think of Canada and West Coast, I think of two ports, and I'm curious to why Prince Rupert or Vancouver are out of the running for bringing Canadian product to market.
So what we have heard recently, environmental concerns at both of those ports, especially Vancouver. The government of Canada has really restricted these type of projects moving forward. However, the 8A project is going to have to get permission to actually to complete the rail. But this has been the focus not only the 8A group. There's another group 2 years ago looking at pretty much the same opportunity. And it started with the Bidman, but it's looked at how do we get this cargo through to market in Central United States.
So Alaska doesn't have the same, I guess, narrow focus on environmental issues or regulations that...
Believe it or not, they not compared to Canada, they do not.
Okay.
I think many of us are in agreement, and I know I am, that we're pretty much too restrictive. I mean, I think, we have worked with Donlin Gold as how can we help you position. The amount of time investment that they have to go through before they can do anything, it's 14 years now. It's kind of hard to have investors invest big dollars now for maybe a payoff in a decade and a half.
Okay.
And then the last question I have is the governance of the port and how the borough has set it up, and is it similar to what Anchorage, where it ultimately it's politically decided on what rates to charge and what how much dollars go to maintenance and how many dollars get pulled out of the port to be spent on other things. How does the Mattsu borough, if at all, are they different than the municipality of Anchorage on their governance of the port?
So it's pretty simple. We have the Mattsu Borough Assembly who hires a manager, and the manager is responsible to the operation of the port, the tariff and fees to the assembly.
So the assembly doesn't set fees, and if you wanted to change the fees, or you wanted to do more for maintenance, or have a reserve account for maintenance, the assembly can't reach in and grab your money.
We do that during the budget time, so they do have the opportunity to do so. We have a set tariff rate that we have to publish, I make the recommendation to the assembly. So there is that political risk.
Did the A2A talk to you about that at all?
So that's why it's taken us 4 months to kind of go through to an actual agreement on what assurances they want and what assurances we are unwilling to give. So, or give.
Well, the challenge on the political side, it's no secret that it's as an elected official, it's hard to charge their constituents more money when it has to deal with a public infrastructure, and sometimes you end up not having the funds to maintain it. We look at the Port of Anchorage. You can look at Fairbanks and the utility system up there where they didn't charge appropriate rates and they ended up fire selling it to the private industry. And I'm just curious about that history repeating itself, or is there going to be some credence that gives private investors confidence that won't happen with the port.
So I think the confidence is going to happen is in the relation, not even the relation, the actual agreement that is signed between the Mattsu Assistant Borough and the project owner, project developer. Like I said before, I think private industry can monetize this a whole lot better than the Mattsu Borough or any government agency will be able to do. I think there's for protection of that. What would make sense to me, and I want you to know nobody's asked me about this, it would make a whole lot of sense to have a port authority that is controlled both Port of Alaska and Port McKenzie and manage it as a business. I think there's too much when you go to the legislator and ask for some things. There's too much competition or fear of potential competition between our ports.
So do you anticipate at some point in time, whether it's through a public-private partnership, approaching ADA for investments and uplands on certain aspects of the port in coordination with A2A if it gets to the finish line?
So with the rail project, I do not. But the rail, when complete, is going to beget quite a few business opportunities and development opportunities. I think that's where I think it'd be a perfect opportunity for a partnership or actually a need from ADA to provide some infrastructure for a specific business that is going to take advantage of this project.
Great.
I wanted to add one comment to your question, and I know I'm probably carrying A2A's baggage on this, but one of the things they said in one of those meetings Julie's been talking about is the geography going across and down seems to be more favorable since you don't have to cross a major mountain range. Whereas to go to Tacoma, Vancouver, although they didn't mention Port Rupert, requires crossing the Canadian Rockies, which apparently is a much more difficult issue for railroads. So we may actually have a geographic as well as a regulatory advantage.
Well, you cross the Rockies between the Nelson and Watson Lake. And you cross it there, then you cross some more mountains between Whitehorse and Northway.
I mean, that's, I mean, there's actually two sets of mountains there. Am I right there, Tom? I mean, it's, I don't know if you have the same grades, but maybe they're a flatter mountain or something and by doing that. But I'm just curious, you know, Prince Rupert is, you know, obviously just south of Ketchikan and a very viable port for doing business in Alaska.
But I think if you come, according to these presentations, so when there is a grade issue, they said the average grade is about 1%, but that's an average rate.
Yeah.
So,
there's already rail in the Prince Rupert.
Right. But there is the issue of dealing with British Columbia. They don't want to deal with British Columbia.
Alberta, that's why it's right. British Columbia. It's real.
And there's, I guess, tar sands are pretty much landlocked right now, and they're limited to how much they can ship through the pipelines and out to existing rail systems.
Yeah. So
apparently their current production is 1.5 million barrels per day. They could do 5 million, which is pretty incredible, but they can't do it until they have a way to get it to market. And also by bringing it in through Alaska, it's about 3 to 5 days closer to Asia, which is where the market is. Versus going to Vancouver or something like that.
I did have the opportunity about 10 years ago to visit the tar sand and watch how they did that. Yeah, pretty impressive. They move a lot of material.
They must.
A lot of material. There's the biggest iron in the world there, actually. John, I thank for the presentation, and we look forward to hearing more about your getting it to the finish line. You know, at the end of the day, you made this statement that they're fully prepared to do the $125 million to finish the rail line. Is that contingent on them getting permits and being able to build the line from Alberta into Alaska?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we are the tip of the spear. Once this is complete, because it is large, they will be looking for investors. They will be able to plant a flag at Fort McKenzie and say, look what we're able to accomplish. We got a project going forward. You know, the state of Alaska, I think we have former Governor Murkowski, you know, working on this. We have some key people working on this to get that investment. So we are the tip of the spear of this. And I think once that happens, this thing will, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen pretty quick.
Okay. Any further questions for John? Thank you, sir.
Thank
we
you very much
for spending the time to come.
Thank you.
And give us a presentation.
Thanks, John.
Okay, that brings us to item number, 7I, Resolution G19-14 Duck Point Development 2, Icy Strait Point, Phase 2. I will inform the board that I do have a business interest in tuna that this may or may not affect, so when it comes to voting, I will abstain from voting on the project. Tom?
Yeah, well, if I could, I'd ask Alan Weitzner, our Chief Investment Officer, to come up and help. And while he's coming up there, Alan was able to come up with a methodology for arriving at interest rates in any given market for projects like this in the course of this particular financing. In the packet, there's a recommendation from the municipality as required. And before people begin, and of course people from Huna Totem are here as well, I'll just say resolution G19-14, $15 million financing, I've sure been through it, and I strongly recommend that the board does approve it. But first, you need to hear about it, and I know you've read the information. So, Alan, why don't you go ahead, please?
Sure. What staff is requesting board's approval for is a $50 million loan to be provided to Huna Totem Corporation's subsidiary, which is Duck Point Development 2, which is the entity that was created by Huna Totem Corporation to develop the new dock at Icy Strait Point and the uplands associated with that dock. Huna Totem Corporation is in partnership with private capital developing the second phase. $15 million is broken up into two parts, $9 million in a construction loan for the initial development of the uplands, and a $6 million expansion capital funding which will be available for an additional 3 years to be drawn down by Duck Point Development Corporation, Duck Point Development 2 Corporation, for additional expansion at Hunitorque Corporation's Icy Strait Point destination. The pricing, the terms of the facility have been summarized in the memorandum. Additionally, we provided some confidential financial information, which includes the term sheet. It's confidential on the term sheet based upon certain business arrangements that Hunitorque Corporation has entered into related to that funding, which they requested to keep confidential.
Any questions from board members?
Were the terms of the financing confidential, or can you briefly take a minute to go through the terms and interest rates?
I have summarized it in the board memo, and I've certainly addressed the summary and most of the points that are in the term sheet.
That's page 205 you're referring to?
Well, it's on the board memorandum itself. It is a summary that's provided on
page 2.
Yes, page 2.
This is the page.
Well, that's the, I believe that's the term sheet.
That's the
I'm referring to.
It's in your board packet under 7I. Look in the board packet at 7I. Bring with you some trouble.
All right, thank you.
Alan, could you, for the public and the board, could you give kind of a general overview on the project start and finish date and just kind of details of that, so to speak, without, you know, obviously going to the confidential financial information, but
certainly
what the plan is. And
Hunitorque Corporation has entered into a partnership with Norwegian Cruise Lines, and in part of that partnership is a preferred use of a new berth that is being developed currently at the second phase of Icy Strait Point. That dock is in development right now, and construction has it begun already, or it will soon be beginning. Has begun on that. The purpose of the loan that is being requested is to initiate the construction, if we'll finalize the design, initiate the construction on a new welcome center that's attached with the second phase, as well as an onload, offload bus turnaround center, and some additional improvements that are on the second phase. The structure of the facility that we put in place is for a one-year availability for construction financing, which we then convert into a term loan, which would have a maximum term period to December 31, 2037. So in aggregate, it's an 18-year facility. 1 year available for construction, 17-year term out. The structure of any expansion, to the extent that there was some additional investment that was required, we would evaluate that based upon the same parameters that were establishing the initial $9 million loan, and that would have the same maturity date at 12/31/2037.
Okay. Great.
Was the term kind of a mutual decision between ADA and the borrower? Did they request that, or is that kind of our standard? How do we come? This just seems like an unusual time.
The initial request was for a 20-year term loan, and we based the term loan date based upon the revenues, the contracted revenues that they have, excuse me, for the dock. So Hunitorque Corporation with its subsidiaries at Duck Point Development 2 and Icy Strait Point enter into contracts with the cruise ship operators for utilization of the dock. And so the specific contract that's associated with the second dock, we evaluated the revenue stream that was coming through and associated that with the maximum term period. So that's how, based upon the terms of that underlying agreement, that's how we came to mutual agreement on the 12/31/2037 final maturity date.
Okay, thanks. Sarah, you also mentioned sculpted amortization.
Yes.
Can you explain what sculpted means compared to just regular amortization?
Instead of a straightforward amortization where there's an equal payment with each, we have quarterly payments on this, there would be an equal payment which is split between interest and principal at each one of those payment dates. We're establishing it based upon the revenue stream that's coming in from their underlying agreements. And in looking at those revenue streams, we're associating the principal payments and interest at a minimum debt service coverage ratio that we're looking to achieve for the underlying operation. So from the cash flow, from revenues and any expenses that they have, we're initially setting a base case at 1.4 times debt service coverage ratio. And that in itself then defines what that principal would be for each of those quarterly payments. So that's how it's definitionally sculpted to their revenue streams.
Lower payments up front, larger payments later, is that kind of
or thing? Higher payments up front, lower payments later, based upon the way that the revenue stream is structured or contracted.
Thank you.
Ada had something with, Mr. Chairman, with fewer moving parts, but somewhat similar with the Gold Belt Tram there in Juneau.
The average life on the term loan itself is about 11, 12 years.
Any further questions for Alan and Tom? Are we ready for the ready to put the motion on the table?
Yeah, I move we approve resolution number G19-14.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Madam President, I'll ask you to poll the board.
Ms. Sandy. Yes. Deputy Commissioner Samarowski?
Yes.
Mr. Kedding?
Yes.
Commissioner Anderson?
Yes.
Mr. Carl?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. All right, that brings us back to item number 7A, resolution L19-03, RSD Properties, LLC, Lake Otis. Looks like we have three up, and we'll take them individually, Tom.
Yes, please. And Mr. Chairman, I'm going to ask. Go ahead.
Before we do this, I think I'm going to ask that we take a quick break. If that's all right, is there any objection to that? Let's take 5 minutes for obvious reasons.
Okay. While the board is on break, I'm going to put the phones on mute. Thank you. You're back on the record.
Thank you. Tom, I'm sorry to cut you off there.
No, but we
have to take a quick break.
That's right, yep.
So we're back to loan resolution 19-03 RSD Properties, LLC, Alaska, Lake Otis, and Tom.
Yes, you bet. I'm going to ask Chris Anderson, our commercial finance director, to come really do the work here on this. But this right through 7F on the agenda. This is 90% participation and 3.285 million, 25-year fixed rate. I certainly recommend approval of 1903. This is refinancing of a medical building in Anchorage.
Thank you, Tom. Welcome, Chris.
Good morning. Thank you.
You got your work cut out for you today.
Yeah, we've been a little busy.
Yes, I see that.
Okay. These three loan resolutions have common ownership, and so there will be some overlap of some of the information. The real estate itself is separate, so I'll try to consolidate some of my comments.
Okay.
Tom's already given you an intro. The guarantor on this credit is Robert Brenna, an attorney here in Anchorage. The purpose is to refinance existing debt. The collateral is a medical office building, 29,660 square feet in the UMed district. There is no construction or permanent jobs associated with this request. and Robin will be, or Mr. Brenna will be, the managing member. He's an experienced commercial real estate owner, very successful businessman. The collateral itself is located at 4050 Lake Otis. It is a Class B office building, and it was built in 1971. It was appraised by Steve McSwain as a market value of $5.4 million. Loan to value is 68%. Debt service coverage is 1.70:1 with existing tenants. We do have a related debt currently with Mr. Brennan in the amount of $1,317,021. This will be paid off with this, with these loan participation requests. And concurrently with this particular request, as we've discussed, there are two other requests before us. And collectively, assuming approval of all the requests, we have $7,146,000 outstanding to RSC Properties, LLC. There were no environmental issues noted in regards to the market. The overall vacancy rate for A and B space in Anchorage is about 11%. Vacancies in the Midtown area are running about 10.3%. And the subject property with its amenities is well placed as a Class B collateral. The project was renovated in 2012-15 at a cost of $2 million. The occupancy is multi-tenanted. It is fairly diversified. The debt service coverage, as I mentioned, is well above our minimum. And there is strong outside financial support available from the guarantor in this request. Portfolio diversification. These numbers will move around a little bit because there's multiple requests. So I think I will just say that in regards to the statewide portfolio, four office types were under just under 22%. If you want me to walk through these, I will, but they differ somewhat with the requests because there's three of them. I don't know if you want to take questions on individual or do you want me to just...
No, we'll for the record, we can do that individually. I would ask, is there anybody here from Alaska USA?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
We asked you.
Dave Bennett. Dave Bennett is here.
Come on up.
Yes.
Welcome. And your name?
I'm David Bennett. I'm the Regional Vice President for Alaska USA Commercial Lending in the Alaska region.
Thank you, David.
Yes.
So, Chris, do you have any more to add before questions?
No. Not on this particular
question. Okay. Thanks. Questions from the board? Any questions? I've got a couple. And it's more towards the... I typically ask Chris, and I will ask Nordstrom when it's their turn, about your market, what you think the market's doing, overview, the state of Alaska, the economy, projects that, not necessarily this one, detail this loan itself, but your impression of what the economy is doing and real estate values.
Sure. I was actually just talking to Jeff about this while we were on break. But, for the last 6 to 12 months, we've been hearing quite a bit of optimism with business owners. Obviously, a lot of great activity in the oil and gas sector. We feel real estate values are holding their own. Vacancies have risen, obviously, a little bit recently, but there's just not a whole lot of activity with buy-sell transactions, so we feel the market is keeping its value. That optimism's been... We feel it's been tempered a little bit due to what's going on with the seemed like for years now the state budget keeps optimism maybe at being too exuberant, but until that the budgetary items get some long term resolution, we kind of feel like it'll continue to just be kind of flat or steady as far as it goes here at, with small business owners.
So from the perspective, so we have three projects here in front of us that you're sponsoring. And, I mean, so what's your opinion of the portfolio, the loan portfolio that Chris runs for us and the criticalness to the Alaska economy that data does for stuff like this?
Well, the you know, obviously the long term below market fixed interest rates that ADA is able to offer is very attractive to real estate owners, and so this is a great opportunity for Mr. Brenna to take some of his debt and you know get those long term rates and certainty. And improve his cash flow on the properties.
So when you say long-term below market rates, what are you referring to? What market are you referring to?
Well,
bank markets typically?
Yes.
Okay. So, yeah. But a long-term rates around the country for institutional investors, are they typically the same as bank rates or are they lower?
I honestly, Mr. Chairman, I wouldn't be able to speak to that. I guess what I'm speaking to more is the in-house rates that we would offer at Alaska USA. For one thing, we don't offer, obviously, well, I shouldn't say obviously, but we don't offer 25-year fixed interest rates. So the longest rate that we offer at Alaska USA is a 5-year adjustable. So for a borrower to be able to get longer terms fixed than that is very attractive for ADA to be offering that.
So other than ADA, where would you go for a 20 or 25-year loan?
There's the SBA 504 project program, but that program, one of the stipulations of that program is the property be owner-occupied. Okay. So that program wouldn't fit with these particular properties.
Greg?
So just so I understand, when you say Alaska USA only offers 5-year maximum, you're referring to commercial rather than residential, right?
Correct.
Okay. And again, I don't think, at least to my satisfaction, I didn't understand your answer to the chairman's question about elaborating on what you mean by below market rates. Could you tell us something more about what you meant by that? What you think, how far below market are they, et cetera? What you think the market is best measured by for these kinds of loans?
I'd say that, you know, Alaska USA would probably be offering rates in the initial rates in the 4.5% to 5% range for best case borrowers and projects. So does that answer your question as to why I'm stating that, you know, it's...
So you're saying if you were to offer 25-year fixed commercial financing, it might be about 5% for a prime borrower?
No, not for 25-year money. No, I'm saying that we would offer. We're currently offering probably in the neighborhood of 4.5% to 5% for the 5-year adjustable rate that we currently do offer.
Right. So I understand that. Okay. And I'm telling from this. All right. I'm just interested in knowing from a banker's perspective how much below market our rates tend to be. So anything since you mentioned it. Any commentary that you could give on that would be helpful for me personally. Well, as a board member.
I can only speak from what Alaska USA can offer. I can't speak to what our competitors in the marketplace are. I have an idea. I talk to other bankers. I talk to other, you know, realtors and folks in the marketplace to try and gauge what our competitors are doing. And I think the interest rates that I gave you are competitive with the other financial institutions.
Are they similar though? Short term, 5 years. You know, they're not going to do 20-25 year loans.
No, the longest fixed rate that I am familiar with is probably, you know, that's done internally at a financial institution is around 10 years. So I haven't heard of anybody doing beyond 10 years.
So I guess maybe what Greg's trying to gauge here is you say below market rate. So where is the bar? What do you consider market rate? What is the market rate if you're talking below market rate?
For 25-year financing, I mean, you're in these markets. You kind of know, even though if you don't do it, what are they?
For 25-year, I don't know of anybody offering that besides ADA and the SBA program. So I can't even pick a number for
interest rates. You would say it's a great tool that your commercial operation can use for your customers.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. And do you think that at the onset, I mean, obviously you compete with other financial institutions. I mean that's where we all compete one way or another. Mm-hmm. And having a stable, outlet or option like ADA that's consistent with all the competitors, would you call that good? In other words, we're the same with whether it's Alaska USA or Northrim or First National Bank. But our rates aren't any different than, I assume they're not any different than, depending whoever the co lender is. Is that correct, Chris? We don't differentiate between financial institutions.
No.
Yeah.
No.
And I have one last question. So how long do you finance a motorhome for?
The answer is they don't.
How long?
We can go up to, I believe, 20 years on a motorhome. That's a consumer loan product. I haven't looked at it actually recently, but I believe it's a 20-year.
So you go 20 years on a motorhome and you'll go 5 on a commercial property?
Well,
that's an interesting dynamic.
Right.
I actually kind of led to that because I used to be in the RV rental business, so I know that and it's a very, a motorhome obviously appreciates way more than a piece of property, but I find that just fascinating that a 15 or 20-year note on a motorhome versus 5 on a commercial piece of property is.
Can I clarify, Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
The interest rate is only adjustable at 5 years. Our amortization period can go up to 25 years amortization with a 15-year call on commercial real estate. But I see your point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Curious.
Yeah.
Not to put you on the hot seat.
But I have one other question to follow up. So you think the long-term forecast for these type of office buildings is favorable? Because it looks like they're pulling some equity out. And I just want to make sure they're not doing that because they see a different future for Alaska. That's my concern.
Yes, right. There is no equity extraction on these projects. It's but it's as Chris said, it's a restructuring of debt.
It's a pay down of debt.
Yeah.
So here you go. Two of these are labeled equity.
Yes, they're pulling it out, but they're rearranging the debt.
They're not
extracting it to go to Hawaii. Okay.
No, new money is being extended on these three projects.
Yeah.
I will notice it says structure for your facility. It says fixed for 15 years. Is that correct?
Not the interest rate.
No, not
the term 15 years. Structure fixed for 15 years.
I see it.
Yes,
it
says
it's term 15 years.
The structure says fixed.
Right. Oh, not on this sheet, is it?
Yeah, I'm just looking at the memo.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you look the page before the resolution, if you look at the page before the resolution,
that is a typo. I apologize.
The rate is variable.
Apologize.
Yeah.
Darn it! I'm trying to get the borrower. I'm trying to get them fixed for 15 years.
Yeah, it's variable. I'm sorry. Ours is fixed.
Okay. And the resolution calls that? Is the resolution correct?
The resolution is correct because the resolution is fixed to our participation.
Okay. All right. I just didn't want the board to get confused on the participation by the financial institution. Great.
Chris, stop me if I'm asking something confidential.
Okay. You are.
On the confidential memo, there is a number that says underwritten at blank. Okay, is that blank the rate that our piece is done at?
Let me get to it here.
I'm shaking his head, so I assume that's yes. I'll wait for you to answer. So on the bottom of page 1, the confidential credit presentation.
Yeah.
Okay, there's a number that says underwritten, and then there's a number in there. Is that the rate for the loan? Thank you. And the one above that is the rate the bank, Alaska USA, is offering the variable rate at, right?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Okay,
to that.
Further questions for Chris on this resolution before I ask to put it on the motion? Okay. You don't have to go anywhere.
Okay.
I move we approve resolution number L19-03.
Second.
Further discussion. Julie, Ronnie, I don't want to leave you folks out. I want to make sure if you have any questions.
Call for the question.
Question's been called. Corinne?
Miss Sandy?
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Samarowski?
Yes.
Mr. Kedig?
Yes.
Commissioner Anderson?
Yes.
Mr. Carl?
Yes.
Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. All right.
That brings us to
7B, Loan Resolution L19-04, RSB Properties, LLC, 2nd Avenue. And I start with Tom.
Well, thanks.
I'm going to do this again about five more times.
Exactly right. Yes, I do recommend approval of 1904. 90% participation, $1,746,000. Refinance an acreage office building, 25-year fixed rate. Alaska Federal Credit Union, remarkably similar in many respects to the previous participation.
I will note that the memorandum is incorrect where it says fixed for 15 years.
It is on all three.
Okay.
It is on all three.
Right, normally, Chris, the board would get a lunch out of that.
I know. Bill's going to pay.
Mr.
Chairman. For that.
I like to ask that.
Okay.
Welcome back, Chris.
Thank you. This particular property is also owned by Mr. Brennett. It is also refinanced. It's a two-story office building, 16,671 square feet in the downtown business district. Again, no job creation. The management is the same as Mr. Brennett. The collateral itself is 650 West 2nd Avenue. Class B office building built in 1972, appraised by Mr. McSwain, Steve McSwain, at $2,000,008, gives a loan to value of 69% and a debt service coverage of 1.69:1. The related debt, I'm going to say, is the same as your previous presentation, along with no environmental issues. At the overall vacancy in A and B is 11%. It increased, Class B increased in 2018 due to the Legislative Information Office, the LIO, on 4th Avenue, but since that's been leased to the police department, the overall vacancy rate in the area should be reduced. Subject property with its amenities is again well placed with an indicated 8% vacancy rate. The financial support is the same. You have the same guarantor. So essentially, most of this information is the same with the exception of the collateral. No extraordinary risk beyond typical real estate market. And again, in regards to diversification, statewide, it's under 22%.
Chris, did you have the opportunity to visit, or someone from your staff visit the properties that are in front of us today?
Yes, actually, these are all, these have all been in the community for a long time. So I've actually looked at these properties over the years.
Did the same appraiser do all appraisals?
No, I don't think so. Steve did this one.
All three of them.
Oh, he did all three? Did he do the last one also? Okay. Steve did all of them. Mr. McSwain.
So, just from a general policy standpoint, is there any risk in that?
Well, we do not order the appraisals. The lenders ordered the appraisals them several years ago because they're... was a little bit of angst in the lending community on lenders ordering their own appraisals. I think for the most part you've divided your responsibilities.
We have.
And have an actual appraisal
reviewer order the appraisal, so they separate it from the lending function to try to mitigate.
Is it similar to residential, the Dodd-Frank Act? Are you even allowed to talk to the appraiser after you've ordered it? In residential, they're not allowed to even talk to them.
Once the appraiser's been engaged, the loan officer can then know who the appraiser is, and yes, we can then talk to the appraiser, but okay. Not...
So it is a little different than residential.
Right. Right.
Residentials are precluded. I was a mortgage broker, and I could pick the appraiser, I could do my order for him, but that's no more they quashed that with the Dodd-Frank Act. Right.
From a policy standpoint, though, Chris, not necessarily today and with this group of loan requests, do you think it would be appropriate, Tom, Chris, to go back and say if there's multiple loans in front of us, that one of our policies to the sponsoring lending is that we have different appraisers? That, you know, you got three loans up in front of us. It's just kind of a risk management. And not that there's anything wrong with the appraiser. I have no reason to doubt the validity of the appraisals. But you know, it's again, you're making a loan decision based on 75% minimum on any, you know, on an appraisal. And if you have multiple programs in front of you by the same appraiser, you're now taking a look through his eyes only. And I just wonder if that's appropriate.
I would say just generally that, we do read the appraisals cover to cover. I mean, we do read them, we do analyze them. And just generally speaking, I think we see enough appraisals come across our desk that we have a general feel for the market and the income per square foot on a type of property and the expense ratios. I know that's a general statement. I don't know if there's any cost effectiveness in ordering appraisals when they're multiple. But, you know, that's something.
It's just risk management for the public's money.
Yeah.
Yes. What do you think, Tom?
I think it has merit. I think it's worth discussing and considering. I really do.
Yes.
I think, you know, we all know how the 2000, the most recent recession, for which we're in the longest recovery in U.S. history, we know how that began.
Yes.
And, of course, that was in the residential, not the commercial side. But still, I think it's well worth considering, you know, how do we prevent problems before they occur.
Okay.
Well, a lot of these loans, they have review appraisers.
Yeah,
like Ken Dane comes in and reviews
and they do it here too.
They do here too.
Do
so there is another
appraiser
that double checks.
But at the end of the day, you know, when people look to see what happened after a problem happened, they go back and they look at the file and they see what happens. And the first thing that one would say was, "Well, the same appraiser did everything." Regardless, and so it's just a policy. This is the first time we've had multiple loan requests refinancing by different organizations, and I don't disagree with why they're doing it. I'm just wondering from a public policy standpoint if we should look at that, and I'll leave it to you two to come up with something.
Concentration is often a red flag.
Okay. Great.
As per the chairman's question on the previous loan, what are you looking for from ADA on this? And you had mentioned below market rate, fixed term, I assume capacity, the 9-10 feature. Would you feel those same features apply for this loan? Which do you think is more important to less if you could rank them like that of those three things that ADA offers?
I think the long-term fixed interest rate is probably the most attractive feature. And tied into that is the fact that the borrower can get up to 90% of the loan amount at that long-term fixed interest rate. And I'm sorry, the third feature was...
Well, you mentioned three things, the participation, the term, and the below market rate.
Right. So I guess I would put the interest rate, the term, and then the participation percent there as the third attractive feature.
Low rates, the most of it?
Yes.
Attractive? Okay.
Yes.
And do you feel that Alaska USA is 10% sort of as high as you could go just as an institution? Could you finance the whole thing if you wanted to at the variable rate, or do you have capacity constraints that really make this type of aid of financing imperative to get these kinds of deals done?
No, we could finance this project in-house 100% at these terms.
As long as they could do the variable rate.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so I'll ask for a motion to put it on the table.
I move resolution number L19-04.
For a second. Okay. Thank you, Julie. Thank you, Bill. Further discussion? Bernie, Julie, online. Any further discussion from you?
No, call for the question, please.
Thank you. The question's been called. Corinne, would you pull the board, please?
Ms. Sandy.
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Samarowski.
Yes.
Mr. Ketty.
Yes.
Mr. Anderson.
Yes.
Mr. Carl.
Yes.
Mr. Bruce.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you, Corinne. It brings us up to loan resolution under 7C, 19-05, RSD Properties, LLC, N Street.
Mr. Chairman, very similar. I do recommend resolution 1905 be approved, 90% participation, aid apportion $2,115,000 to refinance an Anchorage office building, 25-year fixed rate. And Chris can certainly answer any questions.
Well, I guess I'll start with correcting Alaska USA's structure in that that should also be variable, not fixed, on the 15 years. This is also a refinance. It's a two-story office building downtown, 20,469 square feet. Same management, Mr. Brenna. No jobs created with this particular request. And this is 810 M Street, right downtown. It's a building that was built in 1978. Again, Mr. McSwain appraised the property for $3,450,000. Loan to value is 68%, and the debt service coverage is 1.66 to 1. Same information on related debt, environmental, financial.
Chris, would you remind everybody what the minimum ratio is?
Debt service coverage minimum is 1.25 to 1, okay. So this is well above that. The market information that I just discussed, this is the same in the downtown area. This does have added amenities of a cook inlet view and workout facilities in this building. Strong financial support from the guarantor, and no extraordinary risk beyond typical market cycles. And again, in regards to diversification for this type of property in this area in our portfolio, just under 22%. So staff does recommend approval of this request as well, and I would open it for questions.
Thank you, Chris. Questions? I will ask, is this the loan committee, Tom, or Chris, do anything different when you have a multiple borrower coming in with multiple projects? Or do you look at them individually? Do you look at them as, obviously, there's a cumulative effect that you look at with a borrower overall?
We go through them one by one, but go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, it's not actually very common that we get multiple ones. However, we do look at them individually with the obvious overlap of financial information and guarantors.
Yeah, obviously this organization is not the first time that there's been more than one, but we want to, just curious if there's any governance difference that you do when you get multiple. You know, obviously we've seen bigger dollars on individual projects, so just if there is something different that you do.
Well, they're underwritten separately, but we, of course, look at the overall and the overall debt and, you know, compare that to the financial strength of your character.
So B office compared to A office, vacancy rates, what do you see?
Well, I think that AMB combined was about 11%. I don't know that I've carved out A recently.
Well, there's a pretty difference in between the two.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Andrew can speak a little better to it than me, but I've seen A be closer to maybe 13 or 14% vacancy, and I think B is maybe just a little bit, a couple percentage points maybe below that.
Less.
So you differentiate in the loan what office space it is, A or B, but you put them both together in your analysis. So maybe we should when we have analysis, A is A and B is B. What do you think?
This is a B space.
When we do an analysis of vacancy rates and whatnot, that it's actually we actually break it apart and say we don't have A, B, we have A, or we have B. So as a board, we understand exactly what type of. I mean, there's a big difference as far as type of office space it is.
So if I can add something in here, under your market competition analysis, you have overall vacancy rates for class A and A/B space at 14.6 and 11. So you have class A broken out at 14.6 and A/B combined. Is that a subset A/B at 11%?
It's just confusing,
We can break it out.
It's class B in front of us, and so we're trying to make an economic decision on it.
Yeah. We can break that out.
Yeah, we should break it out, and we should, you know, let you know if we're over-concentrated in any particular class.
Yeah, you'll have your commercial real estate portfolio, then you'll have your breakout.
We should do that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, so downtown is 16%.
Yeah, I noticed that. 16%. That's pretty high.
Well, some of the downtown is because of the LIO. You know, that was a large.
They haven't factored that in. But.
So that 800 pound gorilla is still there, is it?
Yeah, but it's not leased, which is good.
Further questions from board members before the question, Greg?
Not to sound like a broken record, but it is a different loan. So let me ask you a different way this time. If ADA were to charge for their 25-year fixed rate the same rate that you're charging for the first 5 years of your variable rate, if we were to do that, would Alaska USA still be able to underwrite your portion of this loan, in your opinion?
I'm not sure I understand. Still be able to underwrite, meaning would the financial ratios fit and within our...
Yeah, for this particular loan, would you still have been able to do that, or would you not have been able to make that loan then?
Well, I think because the debt service coverage ratios are significant, you know, at the levels they're at, then this deal still would have been approvable.
Okay.
You know,
thank you.
Yes.
All right. Further questions? Question.
I move resolution number L19-05.
Second.
Grin, would you pull the board?
Miss Sandy.
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Semenovsky.
Yes.
Mr. Kennedy.
Yes.
Commissioner Anderson. Mr. Carl. Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. I hate that one.
Yeah.
The wires. All right. You're off the hot seat.
Thank you.
Brings us up to item 7E, loan resolution 19-06, Sun Mountain Development Group, LLC, Unit A, Planet Fitness.
Mr. Chairman, these next three have a similarity also, as far as location and the bank, et cetera. And I recommend this L1906, and it's a 90% participation. $3,847,500 for a just now constructed fitness center in Wasilla. And Chris could probably give an overview of the whole project and also answer any questions about Wasilla, since we're switching from Anchorage to Wasilla.
All right, thank you. Welcome back, Chris.
Thank you. It's been a long time. Yes, this is new construction. So, as you've
indicated...
That's
good to hear.
Pardon me?
That's good to hear.
Yeah, it's, it would be terming out a construction loan. And, well, Tom's given you the numbers on this. The borrower is Sun Mountain Development Group, LLC. This is known as Unit A. There are multiple guarantors, which I will walk through with the first request here. ANC Investment, AMG and Associates, LLC, Alexis Gavorgian Jr., Odette Najarian, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, H5 Construction, LLC, Cameron Johnson, James, Lisa, Daniel, and Jody Hacker, 28 INC, LLC, Andrew and Shannon Ingram.
All right, well, that's a lot of guarantors.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I'm going to ask the Nordstrom representative to come up. Welcome.
Thanks.
For the record,
Sue
your
Wolf.
Name?
This is Sue Wolf.
I'm Sue Wolf, Vice President, Commercial Real Estate Loan Officer.
Thank you. Welcome.
And I'd like to invite Andrew Ingram, if that's all right, too. He's one of the owners of Sun Mountain and Commercial Real Estate.
We won't do that.
Okay.
On the financial side. But
okay.
So we have questions of the project. We'll ask the owner to show up.
Okay.
So this is a term financing, a new lease to be built for a Planet Fitness in Wasilla, located in a core business area. There will be 125 construction jobs associated with it and 25 new permanent jobs. The principal owners, Alexis Gavorgian and Cameron Johnson and Andrew Ingram, are all seasoned commercial real estate owners, successful business persons in the community. The property was, well, first of all, we're going to do a first deed of trust on this. The shops at Sun Mountain, which is a site condominium project in Wasilla. 25,000 square feet for a Planet Fitness. These would include, this would include an open layout for fitness equipment, specialized training, locker rooms. It's going to be an addition to the community, I think. A good addition. Greg Wing with North Pacific Advisors appraised this property at $5 million. That will give it a 75% loan to value and a debt service coverage of 1.48 to 1.
So are all three of these the same building?
No.
So
they are separate, all separate.
All separate. Same piece of property?
All in construction.
Same piece of property?
Same development.
Okay.
When you say site condominiums, this is part of that site condominium complex? Is
yes.
That?
Yeah.
It's just for the Planet Fitness, this one.
Actually, I didn't take multiple copies, but this will explain the site plan. So that you can see it.
So, if I can, Planet Fitness, Sonic, MTS.
Here's another one.
Thank you.
Okay, question.
Go ahead.
So, for each of these applications, it states you're going to provide 125 construction jobs and 25 new permanent jobs. So, I imagine that's for each separate construction that collectively.
What was the numbers again?
125 and construction and 25 permanent for each application.
That's a location.
That's individual for that particular project.
So each one will take 125.
No, the next one is 115 construction.
Sorry.
And 45.
Right.
Oh,
one is different.
It's different. This one's different.
I'm trying to remember, but I read
job that creation. So two out of the three are 125 and 25,
oh, okay.
But one out of three is 115.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I totaled them up for the potential press release I would issue.
Mm-hmm.
My total suggests 365 construction jobs and 95 new permanent positions for all three of these.
Together.
That's good.
So I have a question from Northroom. what percentage of your commercial loan portfolio do you bring to Ada?
You know, I can't answer that. I don't know percentage-wise. Typically, for new construction projects, most of our borrowers and developers prefer to go to Ada, mainly because as they're trying to attract tenants to their properties, a lot of times they have to negotiate a pretty good deal starting out. And a variable interest rate over a large portion of the loan could become problematic from a cash flow standpoint. So that's one of the attractive features of an Ada loan, is that it helps the borrower manage their cash flow because they know that a large portion of their loan is going to be a fixed interest rate. And so, you know, it kind of goes back to some of the questions that you were asking, Mr. Bennett. It's, you know, while the bank would prefer to hold loans on their books because it's an earning asset for the bank, reality is that for some developers, depending upon how the deals are structured coming in, they may not get done otherwise without the ability to do a 25-year fixed rate loan.
Stability, yeah.
Right.
So along those same lines, is it the 20-year piece that's important, the fixed piece, or is it the actual below market rate? And the second part of my question will be the same as I asked Mr. Bennett. Would Northern Bank have been able to do this entire loan on their own, or would you have needed a co-lender for this? In other words, would you have had the capacity to have done this loan on your own? So both questions.
We have capacity. However, this particular borrower we have an ongoing relationship with for additional future development. And at some point, the bank reaches capacity. So in order to be able to do new construction loans for future projects, being able to lay off, if you will, a good portion of the permanent loan is very beneficial. So, yes, we could have done it, but from a long-range planning standpoint for this particular customer, it doesn't make sense. And the other side of it is, the borrower may not have wanted to continue pursuing the project because the bank would not be able to do a fixed rate 25-year loan. You know, we do have the ability to typically the maximum term that we will do is 10 to 15 years, and we fix the rate in either 3 to 5 year increments. We are able to do, we do quite a bit of swap financing where we're able to go out and the borrower is able to secure a fixed rate and the bank still earns a floating rate. But typically those are also only on a 10-year term. Now, the amortization period is longer to facilitate the monthly payment, but the reality is the borrower would be forced to look at a refinance, you know, in 10 years, which is, again, gets back to, you know, how you negotiate your tenant leases going in, what that's going to look like from a long-term cash flow standpoint, not knowing what rates are going to be in 10 years. I mean, that those are all things, business decisions that the borrower and the developer have to make. And it's hard to predict, you know, where that's going to be, whereas going in, if you're able to secure a fixed rate for the majority of the transaction, you know, helps them make better long-range plans and negotiations with tenants.
So just so I understand, your answer to the first part of the question was the fixed rate feature rather than the below market feature that was important to your borrower?
I would say it's a combination.
So could the borrower have done this had there not been a below market interest rate?
They probably could have done it, but whether they chose to do that with those kind of risks, they may have decided not to.
Thank you.
So needless to say, it's a program that Northrim uses on a regular basis.
Yes, sir.
For their customers, and it's about taking care of the customers and opportunity. Is that a fair statement?
I mean, we have to look at our customers when we look at them as relationships. They're not just loans. They're not deals. And so if that particular deal makes more sense for them to go ADA, then that's certainly what we're going to do because it's in their best interest to do that.
Chris, is this our first loan with this organization, or do we have loans with any of the people that are guarantors?
We have related debt, yes.
Okay. Is that spelled out here?
Yeah, that's my next subject.
And I was curious how you related debt. I mean, is it with the whole group or just part of the group?
Part of the group, oh. Yeah. It's not the same complete entity.
Okay. I don't think I've seen so many guarantors on a loan.
I'd rather have too many than too few.
I like to see that board meeting. A lot of burgers.
You should see the loan documents.
I can imagine. Yeah.
Kill a few trees on that one. Okay. In regards to related debt, we do have a participation in two other loans. Assuming with those loans that these three that you have before you are approved, is there something going on there? The three deals before you, $7,000,900. Existing commitments or existing loans on the books, $3,947,624. So assuming everything is approved along with existing debt, total outstandings would be $10,956,825. And I won't go into the particulars because it's the financials, but I think you will see that it's well affordable to them.
All right.
Environmental, no known issues. In regards to the market, the area has two other major health clubs, Body Renew, Alaska Club. The Planet Fitness franchise has a proven business model to compete with these fitness centers. Memberships in these types of fitness centers is expected to increase in the Matsu population. Continues to grow, as I think everyone knows. There's quite a burgeoning population boost out there. The strength of this particular transaction is the fact that it is newly constructed. The tenant lease is for 10 years with 2 5-year options. The franchisees will personally guarantee the lease. The owners are experienced. They're expanding in Alaska. The debt service, as I mentioned, is 1.48:1, and our minimum is 1.25:1. And there's strong financial support from the guarantors.
I will note that down on 7F, that I see that they take care of their customers. You can Krispy Kreme donuts, and you go right into Planet Fitness.
Then you
have lunch at Sonic. I mean, customer never leaves the property.
Yeah, but I told somebody the other day it's just a one-stop shop.
Yeah. I'm going to have to go out and try that, Tom.
Well, again, I'll address portfolio diversification in the retail, but again, this is a statewide number, just under 21%. So other than that, we do recommend the approval of this credit, and I'll open it for questions if you have any.
Greg?
So the 10-year lease to the franchisor of the Planet Fitness, you said with 2 5-year options, is that 5-year options to renew the lease?
Yes.
So if those were an exercise, let's just say it fails, does that create any additional risk for us then, given we're making a 20-year loan? I guess that's more to Chris then.
Yeah, typically if it's a if it's an ongoing business.
You're off 25.
I thought, is this a it's a 20-year rate, but 25-year loan.
Yes.
Okay, got it. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Typically with an ongoing business, it's been successful. They're going to, and they have a vested interest in the location. They're going to exercise their options. I don't think it's very common that they don't exercise options.
And I think particularly for this group, I mean, the bank did quite a bit of vetting with this franchisee because they are new to Alaska. they're going to have about $2 million of their own money into the tenant improvements. So while the borrower is contributing a little over $600,000 towards tenant improvements, the borrower is going to have $2 million of their own money into it. So that's a significant investment, as well as the fact that they are a guaranteeing, personally guaranteeing the lease. And we did financial vetting of them, and they are very strong financially.
Further questions? I'll take a motion to put on the table.
I move resolution number L19-06.
Second.
Thank you. Further discussion? I'll have a call for the question. Fran, will you pull the board?
Ms. Sandy.
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Samarowski.
Yes.
Mr. Kitty.
Yes.
Commissioner Anderson.
Yes.
Mr. Carl.
Yes.
Mr. Bruce.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. It brings us up 7E, loan resolution L19-7, Sun Mountain Development, Unit E, Sonic.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend approval of L19-07, 90% participation, 20-year fixed interest rate, $1,017,000, same location. Same bank.
So, full disclosure, my wife grew up around Sonic, so she's going to make me go out there.
There's
I'll be out there spending money. We're going to drive to Wasilla to have a Sonic.
We could do a side inspection.
Oh, yeah. Because we're a little town, Oklahoma. I mean, that's the first place she goes.
Is it like a hamburger place?
Yeah. The drive-in, you drive, you know, back there, they.
Right.
Yeah. Talk,
You may be going out there more than once.
I mean, I'd like to be part of this. This is that sure winner.
Yeah.
I feel all right.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Chris.
I think it'll be popular. Okay. Again, guarantors are the same. This is a fast food restaurant in Wasilla, as you're aware. To be constructed. 115 construction jobs related with this, as well as 45 permanent jobs. Management is the same. Collateral, again, we would take a first deed of trust. This is on Unit E. And 2,700 square foot Sonic fast food restaurant. 64 seat dine-in and car hop. Have you ever been to one, Mr. Chairman?
What's that?
Have you ever been to one?
What's that?
Sonic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Every time I go back to where my wife grew up.
Oh, okay. All right. This property...
I have a choice.
This property was appraised by Greg Wing with North Pacific Advisors. That's $2,260,000. It's a 50% loan-to-value and 2.35-to-1 debt service coverage. The related debt remains the same. No known environmental issues. Overall vacancies for restaurant-type properties in Wasilla between 4 and 8%, and the outlook for the continuance of high occupancy level for these types of properties are well-designed and located with competitive rental rates. This is also a 10-year lease with 2 5-year options. Sonic Restaurant has a successful business model.
Great.
Strong guarantor strength, and we don't have a lot of exposure statewide in restaurants. So, this with the approval of this property or this collateral, it would increase to 2.6% overall. So, we recommend it. It's a good loan.
Questions? Great.
Is the Sonic financer a different entity than the Planet Fitness franchisor?
Yes. The franchisee is made up of Cameron Johnson and Alexis Gavordian, who are also principals in the Sun Mountain Development Group. And then there's another fellow by the name of Larry Clark, who is going to run the day-to-day operation of the restaurant. Okay. And they have the franchise... the state franchise agreement with Sonic.
And they're not the same people who are franchised
Planet Fitness?
No, sir.
No.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
No, those two fellows are out of Lake Oswego.
Any questions? Julie, Bernie?
All for the question. And we should go out and have a burger. We should have had a burger before we voted on that.
But long hot dog.
Yeah, we could deter this.
Yeah. I'm surprised there's not Sonics on the table.
Yeah.
Not quite perfect.
Yeah. 50
degrees. Jim Best. So I'll look for a motion.
I move resolution number
L19-07. Second.
Thank you. So the resolution has been put. Any further discussion? Question, friend.
Ms. Sandy.
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Samarowski.
Yes.
Mr. Keating.
Yes.
Commissioner Anderson.
Yes.
Mr. Carl.
Yes.
Mr. Bruce.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Okay, brings us up to our last one, loan number, resolution number L19-08, Sun Mountain Development Group. Unit C, Krispy Kreme.
This is the one I'm...
I think we're gaining weight this week.
This is the one I'm struggling with. I'm having enough trouble with my work. And I live out there. Now they're making it tougher on me.
Is this a part of the Green New Deal? I don't know what...
Mr. Chairman,
Tom, you're up first.
I recommend approval of L1908. $2,144,700. Tenants already in place. A retail space, I would call it, but I'm not maybe. Well, okay, Chris says I can call it retail. Thanks. Anyway, 90% participation, a strong deal, it looks like to me.
So Tom, so does this mean we need to watch MTA? I mean, they're going to smell those donuts every day right next door. I mean, that's got to be tough.
That's the market right there.
Yeah.
Nonprofits import Krispy Kreme donuts into Juneau by air and raise money with these Krispy Kreme donuts.
Yeah.
Very often.
Yeah.
It's a fundraiser event.
Chris, you're up again.
Okay. This keeps getting better here. Krispy Kreme and MTA, it's term financing for a retail building in Wasilla. 125 construction jobs associated with this and 25 new permanent jobs. We take a first deed of trust on Unit C. It's a 9,000 square foot building. 69% of the building will be MTA, and Krispy Kreme will be taking the balance of the space. Greg Wing also raised this at $3,740,000. Loan to value 64%. Debt service coverage of 1.68 to 1. Again, above our minimum of 1.25. Related debt is the same, as well as no known environmental issues. The market I addressed in the last presentation. Again, the leases on this the lease on this property is 10 years with 2 5-year options. Krispy Kreme is known as a successful franchise with local owners. Strong outside financial support and no extraordinary risk beyond typical market cycles. And again, as far as retail, just under 21% statewide. And we recommend this loan for people. Anyone has questions?
Questions from the board? I'm familiar with MTA, obviously.
This is a little belated, but this is a rendering, so this is what the building will look like, just so that you don't, you know, pass it in a hurry.
There's a line outside of Krispy Kreme on this picture.
Yeah. It's in anticipation.
So while we're looking at the picture, questions from board members. Bernie, Julie?
No, call for the question.
I'm here.
I move resolution number L19-07.
Oh, wait. We slipped here.
Oh, wait.
All right. So, Phil and Julie both concur with the change 08. Without further questions, I'll ask Prim to pull the board.
Ms. Sandy. Deputy Commissioner Samarowski.
Yes.
Mr. Ketty.
Yes.
Commissioner Anderson.
Yes.
Mr. Carl.
Yes.
Mr. Bruce.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. All right. And thank both financial institutions for coming and giving us today and answering some questions. Okay, that brings us to item 7G, which is to discuss executive session, which is to discuss confidential information related to the North Slope pad, confidential personnel issues, confidential attorney-client communications. So I'll entertain a motion to go into executive session.
So I move that the board enter into executive session to discuss confidential information related to medical and confidential personnel issues and confidential attorney-client communications.
Second. Any objections? Bernie and Julie, I want to make sure you have the call-in number. Are we going into the...
You're going into the Aspen room.
So Bernie and Julie, do you have the numbers? Julie?
You are back on the record.
Thank you. I'll mention that here's my little list here. That advise the board that no formal action on the matters discussed while an executive session was taken. That being said, Tom?
Mr. Chairman, I'd ask that resolution G19-13, North Slope Pad, be removed from the agenda for today, and we'll see it on an agenda for a subsequent meeting.
Any objection to removing 7H from our agenda? Hearing none, it is removed for a future date to be determined by staff. That brings us up to item number 8, director's comment. Tom?
I'm sorry. Somebody took my board's hacking and everything. I need to find that.
That must have been
run. Here. Well, there's only... Go ahead, Tom.
Yep. Well, time's speeding along here, and you've got a second board meeting to have. There's a new organization chart. There are a couple of small changes on the energy side that haven't been announced yet, and so I can give you that chart. But it's the main changes are our external communication press legislative guy Karsten Rodvik becomes part of shared services and answers to both Curtis and me. And then secondly, we've taken the IT and put that directly into shared services so that top guy at IT also answers to shared services.
All right.
In the dashboard, the one thing that is worth mentioning, even though time is so short, is that there is a page entirely devoted to the SETS loan and IGU, and as Greg is up to speed on it, there are developments with the IGU, and I won't take time to, you know, but probably I should send out an email or a memo updating people on the IGU because they are moving forward with debt.
Okay.
And, so I should. I've been keeping revenue informed.
A good time to have that update would be the executive session.
Yep.
You know, from time to time.
Yep.
So
yep.
FYI for future meetings.
Yep. Okay. And really, that's the only. Those are the only things that rise, I think, to urgency of letting you know right now.
Okay. So B and C you're done with. We can go right. Next meeting is the 26th of June.
Yes. Yes, Mr. Chairman.
I assume A will be second after that one.
Yep.
A will be first.
Yep.
Okay. It brings us to item 9, board comments. Any board comments? No. Well, as usual.
Well, I'd like to.
Go ahead, Bernie.
I'd just like to thank for the work they do preparing everything because it's always done very well. That effort's sincerely appreciated. And I really like the fact that, you know, you can turn things over if something, if the press wants to know things, turn them over to Kirsten, and he does a good job of handling it and keeps us informed. Appreciate that very much.
I'll pass that along to Kirsten, by all means.
Thank you, Bernie. And I'd like to add my name to the remarks also. Any further comments from the board? Hearing, seeing none, I'll motion for adjournment.
Move on to adjourn.
Second. Opposed? We are adjourned. And we'll move right into...